You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode of The Art of Imperfect Adulting, I'm going to introduce you to Rachel Zinman. Now, I love all of my interviews. I really, really do. But this one is super fun. We talk about yoga. We talk about family. We talk about 9/11. We talk about India. We talk about Bali. And seriously, stay all the way to the end because, like, it's a wild and dramatic story. And when we wrap up at the end with the rapid fire questions, there is a young adult TV connection that has me giggling like a middle school girl, however I want to say that. This is so much fun, you guys. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. I really am. Let's do this. Rachel Zinman, welcome to Imperfect Adulting.
Hi, Amy. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here too. Are you ready to have a fun chat?
I really am.
That is good. So you gave me a hint about this a second ago before I hit record. I start most of the interviews by asking people what part of the world they call home. Where do you guys call home?
Australia.
Oh, I have not been there. I sent my son, one of my kids there a couple of summers ago, but I haven't been, and I really, really want to remedy that. I've wanted to go since I was a kid, but it's so far from where I live. It's just, even though we've made amazing advances in how fast we can travel, it is not a short trip from the East Coast of the United States to Australia. So now tell me and the listeners as much or as little about the people you live with in your family as you want to, just to get a connection between you and the audience.
All right. Well, I live in Australia and I've been living here for nearly 40 years. I'm actually from the East Coast of the United States, born in Holland and then moved to the US. And I'm actually the daughter of a symphony conductor. And so I spent a lot of my life traveling, meeting lots of different interesting people. And I came to Australia on he had a work gig here. He was conducting the Sydney Symphony, and I just came for a holiday. And I actually fell in love with my step cousin. And I was supposed to go to Juilliard as a dancer in New York, and I ended up dropping that gig and moving to Australia and found my way, into an adventure. But right now I am married to a beautiful yogi and teacher of something called Atma Vidya, and I have a 31-year-old son who lives in Melbourne, and he is an amazing musician and graphic designer.
So that is fantastic. So I actually grew up in an apartment, and there was a symphony musician in the building, small building, Upper West Side of Manhattan. And he played, he was a drummer. He played the big round drums, the timpani drums, right?
Yeah.
So, and he also gave drum lessons. I was friends with his daughter. And so there were all these signs all over the place about when he was, there was big, the point is, the joke is, there were big meetings among the people who lived in the building about when the drumming was allowed and when it was hopefully not allowed. Like, this was the whole thing. But it was a delightful part of being in the building. All right. So you submitted to be on the show, and I read your submission, and I immediately dubbed it your Eat, Pray, Love story. Do you know what that reference is, or is it too old?
Absolutely.
Okay. There will be people who will listen to this who will not and watch it who will not know. They'll be like, what is she talking about?
Yeah, no, definitely. Semi-Eat, Pray, Love. Yeah, let's
there
just say
that. Well, I mean, right. It's not going to be a 100% match, of course. But for those of you who don't know, it's a book. And there was a movie with, I think, Julia Roberts. It was a big hit. Everybody wanted to do, to just do the thing. So I'm going to gently walk you through what I know of your timeline. I'd love to back way up to before you took this trip. How old So I wrote this question before knowing I think there are two husbands in your past. How old were you when you married your first husband? Is that the way I want to ask this question?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I was 25 when I got married. Yeah.
Okay. All
To
right.
my first
Your first
husband.
husband, very good. And let's briefly talk about sort of that, like s just to set it up for what brought on this decision to make this change. Like talk about our life. I have a little bit more information than I had when I started. So you guys, it sounds like you guys did have a kid together. What was life like with you guys when it was good?
Yeah, so it was one of those whirlwind romances.
I love that.
I had all these factors that sort of drew me to this person. I met him at a cafe, or I met him at the opening of a shop, and he was very sort of forthright and intense. And my girlfriend said, "Oh, he's the same. He's like this star sign, and you guys would be perfect together." And I kind of sort of was intrigued, and I kept running into him, and he was very forthright. He would say things to me that I found really kind of garish and jarring, but I kind of was intrigued. And then I was in another relationship at the time, and that kind of ended very fast. And I kind of went on a road trip with my husband's actual my ex-husband's best friend. And he kept saying to me, "Oh, we should go around and visit this guy Nick. He's really interesting, And so then I went over and visited him, and he played a song, and I fell in love with the song. And I thought, wow, this guy's a musician. That's so cool. I come from a musical family. I'm really interested in that. And then I went home and I had this dream, and in the dream, I saw that he had a dove in his hand, and I was supposed to rescue him from some, I don't know. And so then I just kind of got obsessed, and I decided I had to go and find him. And I found him at this restaurant, and as he was closing, and he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I had this dream. I'm supposed to rescue you." And we walked onto the beach because we live in a beach town, and we just sort of fell into each other's arms. And 3 weeks later, we were engaged. And so it was,
Whoa.
yeah. And
Nice.
my parents happened to be there at the same time, and they sort of really clicked with him and thought he was a really great dude. And they were like, "Okay, this seems like the one, because I was like 25 and all starry-eyed, and it was all wonderful." And so off we went. And he was very musical, and I had been a dancer, and we started writing songs together. And I think we wrote 80 songs together, like in the first year that we were together. And we got engaged, and then we got married a year later, and we had like a wedding in America, and it was all very la la la, and it was all beautiful, and then a year later we were pregnant, and there were some things that were
As
kind
it
of like
happens.
and there were some
That's
things that
I
were kind
I just want to say good job following the schedule. You get married a year later, you have the baby. That's the, that's the time frame. If you're following the rules, checking off the boxes.
But there were the things, some things that went on when, actually, when I got pregnant. He was a very impulsive person, and he had a tendency to kind of get involved in things. So he was really like I was really into yoga when we met. I was like super focused and dedicated. I'd just discovered it maybe 3 years before, and I was meditating 2 hours a day, and I was doing my yoga practice. And this was in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, when people weren't really like obsessed with yoga the way they are now. So it was like a life path for me. And he kind of joined me, and he gave up drinking and smoking and whatever he was doing. And he said, "No, I'm going to do yoga now." And that was like my initial rescue. I was bringing him into this very healthy, relaxed, way of being. And but when I got pregnant, he decided to do some course called the Change Consultancy Training. And after the first weekend of the course, he came back and said, "Oh no, I'm not being myself at all. I want to go back to all the things that I normally do, which is drinking and smoking." And I was kind of like in shock, because I was like, "What? We're married, I'm pregnant, and now you've decided that you don't, want to live this life anymore." And so I was sort of already, those were kind of the harbingers of what was to come.
What was to come? And I want to be clear, everybody listening, I was totally making a joke when I joked about the time frame. Like that's like there is no actual time frame. But as soon as you get married, people begin to ask you if you're having kids, and everybody, you know, like no one should ever ask. You should never ever ask anybody. You should let people do it on their own time frame. But all right, so very good. So you're pregnant. You have some warning flags, some red and purple flags are showing up. But you continue for a long time. So you talked about your father, it was in the symphony. Tell me a little bit about your family growing up, just to get an idea of your thoughts on marriage and family overall, because, you know, some people grow up with a very traditional idea of family, and other people grow up with a very different idea of family and marriage. And it all comes
Yes.
out when we get married or if we decide to get unmarried. That's when these things show up.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, my father and my mother were together for the first 7 years of my life.
Okay.
My mother was actually very unhappy in the marriage because my father was, starting his career, and he was really busy, and he was conducting all the time. We lived in Holland. And he was on tour, he wasn't there, and my mom was feeling very like not met, I guess.
Yeah,
And
isolated.
but she also had other issues. She was like 90% deaf, and people didn't really know how bad it was. And it wasn't until she got married that she found out that she needed hearing aids. And so often she would turn her hearing aids off. And so, people wouldn't, she would seem like she wasn't really interested or not listening or whatever. And so I think it was difficult for my father, but she decided to leave my father. And so my father was kind of shocked by that, because by that time they'd been married for about 15 years. And then he got on a plane to go on tour, and he sat next to a woman who, ironically, was someone who was a friend of mine when I was a little girl in the orchestra. So I would get on the bus and go on tour sometimes, and I would sit next to this woman. And she and I were very close. And she had even asked my mother if she could have me for the night and I could stay the night with her. So I remember having a night at her house, playing with her and having a nice time. Anyway, my dad didn't really know her. She was just a member of the orchestra, and he sat next to her. And they had this conversation on the plane. And they fell in love. And
Wow.
so my mother had already left him. And so they fell in love. And so she became my stepmother. And because I already knew her, when they got married, it was sort of fine, somehow fine for me. I had this beautiful connection with her already as a young child. And then, anyway, so my parents got divorced, and we moved from Holland to New Jersey. And my father got a position in New York, in Rochester, New York. And so I was going back and forth between New Jersey and New York. Plus, I was a bilingual child. So I spoke Dutch, I spoke English. I came from this European background, and now I'm in this American background. And I'm, kind of shuffled back and forth. But in my father's house, it was like a cavalcade of musicians. Like all
Yeah.
the famous musicians were coming through, and then musicians were living in the house. It was crazy. It was like a very, I don't know really how to describe it, other
That
than
was
it
very
was
arty, very bohemian,
very
very
bohemian, very
Renaissance.
arty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
Yeah.
my mom.
Yeah. So was your mom also in New Jersey at that point? Like, so were you all in the same geographic space?
So my mom was in New Jersey, and
Okay.
my father was living in Rochester, New
Oh,
York.
so, okay. So you
And
split. Got it.
yeah. And then my mom got sick when I was 10, and then she passed away. She had a
Okay.
brain tumor, she had a stroke. And so we moved in with my dad. And that
Okay.
was really when I was really immersed in this very creative life. And then I wanted to be a dancer. And because my dad was, in a financial position to make that happen, I just spent all my time dancing. So I, was at ballet more than I was anywhere else, with the aspiration to become a professional dancer. So
Wow.
that was kind of, my whole upbringing was dance, music, going to concerts, being surrounded by very famous artists and musicians. Yeah, so that was kind of
That's
my
delightful.
upbringing.
So, but you had an early concept. So it doesn't sound like you, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you had a concept of the idea that relationships change depending on where the people are in their life versus a very rigid, We make one decision and it's forever. All right. So people who are listening are probably are watching are probably already going to make the guess that something happened in the relationship. Go ahead and talk us through this marriage breakup, this dissolution. What happened?
It's quite complicated how it happened. So we were living a very creative life. We had this beautiful boy. My ex had quite a few other children from other marriages. He actually had three different children from three different mothers. So he actually has four children. One of whom went through, he had like the first water birth in Australia. And so that baby actually died, and it was a huge inquest and court case. And so it was a very full life. We had lots of we had ki extra kids who would come and visit and stay with us. I was like a stepmother, I was a step grandmother. There was like all these things that went on. But we had our son, and my husband one day went to a psychic. And the psychic said, "Oh, you shouldn't be living in Australia anymore. You need to go to New York. You're going to be a famous radio star." And he came home and he just said, "We need to do this." And I kind of didn't know really what I wanted to do next. I was working as a head of dance at a dance college. I was also working in a Waldorf education school, a Steiner school, and I was starting to maybe think about a career as a Steiner educator. But I didn't really know what was next. I had like a blank page in front of me. And so I said, "Oh yeah, okay, let's just go." And so we just took our, I owned the house. And so we decided to rent out the house, and we had like $50,000 on a credit card or something like that. And we just got on a plane, and I called my parents. I called some friends, found us a place to stay in Stuyvesant Town. And we just, off we went, and we went off to New York with like just big dreams, whatever. Anyway, and then all that time, everything was really fine in the relationship. Everything was fine. We were loving each other. He was a bit indulgent, but I had found ways to kind of cope with it, and everything was fine. And then we got to New York, and I guess pretty quickly in, it became apparent that he wasn't really going to be the breadwinner, and that I was going to have to do it. And I had been a yoga enthusiast, and I taught some yoga classes, and I'd been studying at that stage by 10 years. And I went to a yoga studio, and just randomly found it in the yellow pages, when we had yellow pages, and went to the, before phones and everything, went to the yoga studio. And there was just a series of coincidences that happened that made me realize this is kind of the yoga studio I should be at. So I was sitting there, and there was these pictures of these gurus on the wall, this teacher on the walls. And I thought, "Oh, he looks kind of like maybe he's a guru or something. I don't really want to do anything with gurus. I'll just like go to the other classes." So one day I was in a class with one of the teachers at the studio, and my husband came to pick me up, and the head teacher, the guru, he wasn't really a guru, but the head teacher walked out and looked at my husband and said, "Hey, you look really familiar. Do I know you?" And he said, "No, I don't know you, but my wife's in there, and she's a very experienced yoga teacher, and she needs a job." And so the yoga guru said, like, "Oh, well, that sounds interesting. Let me meet her." And so I walk out of the class, and I meet him, and he says, "Oh, I hear you're a really experienced yoga teacher. We happen to need an experienced yoga teacher. Why don't you come out to lunch with me, and let's see if you can teach here." And it was just like so random, Anyway, so I go, I have lunch with the guy. First I go to his class, then I go and have lunch with him. And then he says, "I think, I feel really like there's something here, there's a connection here, and I think you should teach for us." And that began a huge sort of change for me in my life, where I was not only teaching at the yoga studio, but I was also running their teacher's training and teaching on their teacher's training, and just basically kind of, being very close to him as a student. And he was kind of my mentor, and he introduced me to the depth of yoga. And he was from South Africa, and he came to the States, I guess, in the late 70s. And his father was also a very big yoga teacher who came from South Africa, and they had a strong connection with India and Indian teachers. And so while we were in this thing with the yoga, I got more and more into the yoga, and things started to happen to me that were kind of really opening me up and forcing me to question, you know, really question. And this created a lot of restlessness in our relationship, because he was creative and he was open and he was spiritual, but he felt very threatened by these experiences that I was having. And that started this kind of thing. And he would go on these business trips, and who knows what was going on those business trips. And he would sort of disappear for a while and say, I want to go here, I want to go there, I want to explore this course. He was very spiritual and wanted to do all these self-development courses. And, you know, I was kind of earning all the money and keeping us all going in New York. And then, he would just sort of go off and do these things and come back. And I would be like, that, you know, and he would talk about some women that he'd met, but then nothing happened. And this was kind of all going on. Yeah. So that was the beginning.
That was the beginning. So you discover yoga and you get very passionate, is the word I'll use, about that, very connected to it as a part of you and a profession. You're raising your son. Only one, like the other kids stayed in Australia, I'm assuming.
No, we had one other come.
Okay,
come
so you've got
us.
Two kids, you're making all the money. Your then husband is trying to find his way, let's say, exploring new options and things like that. And then what happens?
So we went through 9/11.
Oh, well, that is the big change. Many, many people had went through big changes after 9/11. Okay, so 9/11 happens. Yeah. Yikes.
9/11 happens, and I did not feel well after that. You know, there was sort of a progression, and I started to feel more and more unwell. I wasn't sure why. I thought it was some sort of spiritual awakening. I thought I was having like a kundalini breakdown or something.
And were you living in the city?
We were living in Brooklyn,
okay.
yeah.
You,
and
you
I
were
was
living in
teaching.
Brooklyn, so directly across the
Yeah, and so it was all, you know, and we actually on 9/11, we walked into the ash to get over the bridge to walk to Queens to then get back to Brooklyn. It was a complicated day.
It was a very complicated day. It's a very complicated day. But yeah, the power all went down. The tunnels all closed. The bridges were closed. People had thousands and thousands of people had to walk hours and
Yes.
hours to try and get home. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was that day. Anyway, so it just things got worse and worse, and I just felt like I wanted to go home. I wanted to go back to Australia. We had a house here. We had a life here. I had friends here. I'd, you know, been already living in Australia for 20 years at that time. I was just or 15 years or whatever. I was like, I just want to go home. So I. And my yoga teacher really wanted to keep me in New York because, you know, I was working really like I was working for the institution. I was making money for them. Like it was all happening when I was there. And so he was sort of like, I don't really think you should go. And I was like, no, I really want to go, you know. So he said, okay, a change happened in the business. They sold the business to a bigger yoga conglomerate. And they said, okay, well, you can go, and but take the teaching system with you, take the whole teaching system with you. So I finally was able to get out of there, and we moved to back to Australia. And I think at that point, that's where things really started to get a little testy because.
Testing.
Yeah, because we got back and I was really happy and I started telling people about this beautiful teacher training and sort of getting people involved in that. But I also kind of met someone who was more into yoga, another fellow yoga teacher, let's say, not my husband, but somebody else. And he was very intense and persuasive, and I kind of got a little bit sort of Svengali'd by this person, and it was very threatening for my husband. And then he also decided that he wanted to sort of be sort of more exploratory, and he actually made the first move to kind of be more exploratory,
in
which
terms
was
of
really
opening up the marriage.
Yes.
Okay.
I was just thinking about it.
You had the thought, and he pulled the trigger and said, all right.
And boy, did he pull the trigger. He pulled it over and over and over again in many, many, many different ways, in all sorts of ways that I didn't even know about at the time. I thought it was like one thing or another thing, but it was like all these things. And so I was kind of like, all right, well, if you're going to do all these things, I am going to explore this thing with this other person. So that was sort of maybe 3 years after we got back from New York, and 2 years before the marriage ended. And so I explored this thing, and it really wasn't for me. It was just like very narcissistic, very sort of Machiavellian.
Right.
Like I thought it was going to solve and answer all my questions, but it
But it
didn't.
did
It
not.
actually created more questions and more complications.
So when you look back at it with the benefit of time, right? So you guys were, so a lot of people left New York City after 9/11. It's a pattern that repeats after disasters. I live in Miami, Florida now. Most people who lived through Hurricane Andrew, which is a big natural disaster here, they eventually moved. A lot of people moved out of New York City, so it's not, but you guys went through a really, really stressful thing. There was a lot of pressure on your relationship. You're raising a bunch of kids. You go back, but you do it, two international moves, pretty not too far apart from each other. And then you've got all this stuff going on in your relationship. You each decide, or you agree, or I would love to be a fly on the wall in that conversation or series of conversations. But you open up the relationship, and when you look back on it now, would you say, because at the time, I bet it just felt like this is our way of moving forward. But when you look back at that now, do you think, oh, we were done? Like we were finished. I just didn't know what else to do at the time.
I think you're exactly on the money. We were so done. We should have just finished, when we got back. But we had a child, and
Right.
he was, in fifth grade. He was like
Still very
11,
young, yeah.
and it just felt like, maybe we can keep going. And we were kind of, we were creative, bohemian people, and we loved each other. Like there was still a lot of love there, and there was a lot of creativity there. And then, by the way, we had decided, like we ended up doing a lot of sort of devotional yoga music when we were in the States. So we had decided that we were going to make an album.
Okay.
And so we were in the middle of creating this album when all this happened, and we actually released the album, and it did really well. So then we were like, okay, let's make another album. We actually
You guys
made
were
three
totally
albums.
enmeshed. You were totally enmeshed. That's the word we use for relationships, that they're so entwined that even when they don't work, you can't sort of separate them. And so
Yeah,
people are
because
like,
we
add in. Yeah. Yeah, you were in
so we
business
were
together, you were in artistic creations together, you were raising a child together, you were living together. You guys were, yeah. All right. So 2 years later, you break up. You end the marriage. Or he
okay.
ends the marriage. Who ends the marriage? Who's
He ended the marriage. He
he
ended the
ended the
marriage.
marriage.
Okay. So interest. So just I have to do a little aside here.
Okay.
So
A very
just
complicated story. I should
it
include it like with a map, like at the beginning of a Russian novel with like the list of all the people and all the places that are involved. People can flip back. I won't, but I could. Keep going.
I did try and write a book about the whole story, which ended up never going anywhere. But anyway, so when I was in New York, the last year that I was in New York, I went back for a summer to teach on a teacher training, and this girl came to my teacher training, and she was a friend of my teacher, right? My teacher, and she was dating my teacher's best friend, who was also South African, also into yoga, and they had my the guy that she was dating had been studying with my teacher and my teacher's father for many, many years in South Africa. And she told me about him and said, I'm with this guy. He's like 20 years older than me. I don't know if it's going to last, but he's like a really serious yogi. And in my mind, this is, I thought I should be with that guy. I should
Oh,
be with that
really?
guy. Yeah.
This is like the dream. Okay, yes.
I should be, yeah, like the
Yeah.
dream. I should be with that guy. And I didn't think anything of it. And then a few years went by. I was back in Australia, and I was, working on my teacher's trainings. And I wanted to do a little bit more in-depth research into the lineage of those teachers, who they'd studied with in India, where that all came from. And so I wrote to my friend, and she said, "Well, don't ask me, ask this guy, you know." So I wrote him a letter, and I said, "Oh, you know, I'm researching the lineage, and can you tell me more about it?" And anyway, he wrote back, and he said, "Oh, you sound like a really interesting, dedicated yogi, and yes, here's some information, but really, you know, I'm studying with a teacher who's way more exciting and interesting than all of those teachers that we studied with back in the 70s, you know, and you should find out more about him." And I thought, who is this guy? Like, I'm writing to him to get this information, and he's telling me all this other stuff, you know, what the? Anyway, then I didn't think about it. Then, like a year later, I'm still in this tumultuous thing with this, you know, open relationship and all this stuff going on. I get an email, a general email that says that this guy is opening up a studio in South Africa and just letting everybody know, like a newsletter. And I remember thinking, don't open up that studio, because if you open up that studio, I'm never going to meet you. And then a year later, I get another newsletter email, nothing personal, that says, oh, I'm closing the studio, I'm going to India.
Okay.
And by that stage, it was, I think, 2000, and maybe it was 2008, end of 2008. And I happened to be going to India to teach Japanese yoga teachers how to be, yeah, to teach Japanese people how to become yoga teachers. So it was my like
Okay.
first, second trip to India. I was going to Goa, you know, it wasn't really India. And so I wrote to him, and I said, I'm going to be in India. Where are you going to be? And he told me he was going to be in this part of India called Tiruvannamalai. And I said, well, maybe we could meet up, you know? And my husband was going to be with me. We were going to be traveling together. So it was just like a friendly thing. Anyway, so I hear back from him, and he says, actually, I won't be, you know, I'm going to be in this place. And yeah, we could meet up. But then when it got closer to the time, we missed each other. We couldn't meet up.
Star-crossed, star-crossed. Okay. This
Yeah.
is like
Anyway.
foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing. And
Yeah.
then the next year, I was going back to India again. And I said, you know, like, we should meet.
Still
And
married.
he's still married.
Still
And
married.
just like I was fascinated, you know, he seemed like there was a connection there, something interesting, you know. And so then he said, no, I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be in Johannesburg, blah, blah. So we missed each other again. All right. So then I wrote to him, still married. Wrote to him, and I said, it seems like we're never going to meet. And we became Facebook friends at that point. So we stopped writing, and we were like Facebook friends. I said, it seems like we're never going to meet. And he said, well, you never know. Anyway, that was the end of that. And then my husband decided he was going on a business trip to Israel. He was going to do some things in Israel, a workshop. He was working for this workshop company where they were running self-development seminars, and he was working for them, whatever. And the night before he decided to go, I, you know, way back in the beginning, when we just started Messenger, like Facebook chat, like
Yeah.
that was like in 2000 and, you know, 10 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah,
So
yeah.
his little chat light came on, and I thought, let me just like say hi. So I just said, hi, how are you? Da da da. I thought I'd try this. Maybe we can have a little chat. And he said a few things, and it was like midnight because of the time change. And I got into bed. And when I got into bed, I was lying next to my husband. I thought, oh no. I thought, oh no, something's going on here. This is really big. This is really big. Everything in my body was just like, this is the next step. But I was like, so like I'm driving my husband to the airport, drop him at the airport, run back to the computer. Do you have Skype? You know? And anyway, so my husband's in Israel and on this workshop, and he's texting me, but slowly the texts are getting further and further apart. And I'm kind of with this guy having these conversations that are just getting more and more interesting and intriguing and, you know, amazing. And I'm learning all this stuff from him, and it's all related to my life with yoga, and all these, you know, things are just clicking over, and I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing. Anyway, so what happens? Time goes by, maybe a month goes by, and I'm in the middle of teaching a teacher training as well, so I'm really inspired while I'm teaching these yoga teachers, and I'm having this like these wonderful, friendly, interesting conversations, but my husband's just not texting me, not texting me. And I'm thinking,
He's
what's going
still in
on there?
Israel.
still in Israel on this workshop, not texting me. And then he's supposed to come back, and obviously he texted me with the plane details or whatever. And so I said to this guy that I'm talking to, I just said, "Look, my husband's coming back. We can't have these conversations every night anymore. We've got to stop. I've got to get back into my life." Like, I didn't really think, "Oh, I'm in love with this guy," or I didn't know him. It was like a chat, like it wasn't like that. But I had this dream the night before my husband came back that he came home and he told me that he was leaving me for another woman and that our relationship was over. And I remember saying to my girlfriend, I had this weird dream about, my husband, and she was like, "Well, that's weird, Anyway, so he comes home, he walks in the door, he sits me down, and he says, "I fell in love with another woman in Israel. We moved in together, and she's coming here in 6 weeks, and I want to break up."
I have so many thoughts running through my head right now. I have so many thoughts running through my head right now. So, that is a fantastic story. I'm really jazzed about the way your dreams forecast your future. Like, I don't meet people every day of the week who do that. It must be like a crazy thing. I feel a little bit like you should be immediately cast into the next sitcom of supernatural characters. But that, okay, so he comes home. So that is really interesting. So what was it like a deja vu feeling in real time because you had had the dream? Were you like, oh my gosh, had you halfway processed it? Or were you just like, I mean, it sounds like this has happened to you at other times in your life. So when you have these forecasting dreams and then it happens, does it help you? Were you more prepared, or is it just as much a bombshell as anything else?
I wish I could say, yeah, like I was more prepared, but it was definitely a bombshell. I mean, it was
I mean,
just like,
also, you
'cause
were emotionally, you were making moves.
I was making moves emotionally. So what happened was, when he told me, and that sort of shock flooded my body, because it does, you get this huge sort of wave of like adrenaline and everything just goes through and you sort of go numb and you don't know what to do. And I just said, He said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I just want to call John. I just want to call this guy, So I called him and he just said, "What?" He was like, No, you guys got to work this out. Like, this is not about me. He just was like right out of there. He was not interested in this at all. And then he, So then, like, and so I had a few days to kind of try and get my head around this. And my husband's like, "This is perfect. You're going to go with this guy. You're going to have a great life with him. This is how it's going to be. I'm going to be with this girl." Like, he had it all sorted. He was like nuts. I was like, "No, that's, I don't know about that. That's not, there's no guarantees with that. We just are friends and talking. And I don't know what he looks like. I don't know what he smells like. I know nothing about this guy. I'd met him online, never seen him."
So funny. I don't know what he
Anyway.
looks like. I don't know what he smells like. I don't know whether he makes his coffee. Oh my gosh. All right.
But I can tell you something pretty well, which happened pretty well straight after that, which was that I wrote a letter to this guy, and I'll say his name, John, because he's my husband and we do have a beautiful life
Okay.
together.
All right. Very good.
So I wrote a letter to John, and I said, "I really think that after all that's gone down, we should meet. We should definitely meet." And I didn't know what else to do when I heard all this stuff. And that's when I thought, well, I could just go to India and I could meet him because he was in India.
And
And
that's why
he.
I thought of that's the piece of this story that I knew. And that's why I was calling it the Eat, Pray, Love story, although it's so much more complex than the Eat, Pray, Love story. Because you pick up and you go on this trip to India. This is not the only thing that happens at this time in your life. Your life at this point is like a country western song. Your son, I don't know how old he was at that time, but he moves out. He moves out, and completing the country western lyrics, you get a medical diagnosis of diabetes. So just to bring everybody to pay to like to bring everybody in to this story that Rachel knows by heart, so it's not complicated for her, but so she's going through this huge life change. Her marriage has fallen apart. She gets on a plane and burns the boats and goes to India. She gets a medical diagnosis and her son leaves home. That's a lot, Rachel. That's so much. That's so much. Now, it's a super dramatic story with a lot of moving parts. I just want to say that one of the reasons I like to share stories like this, and I want to say thank you for sharing your story very, very openly, is because stuff like this happens in real lives, in real houses, every day of the week. And one of the things that makes it seem so impossible for people when they're going through it is that we don't know that when it's happening to us. We, you know, people don't often share these stories. And so you don't hear about them until like a long time ago, until a long time in the future. You know, your grandmother will tell you the story of like, oh, let me tell you the story that happened 30 years ago, right? Like that's how these stories, but we need to hear them when we're in our 20s and our 30s. So that when stuff like this happens to us and to our friends, we're not like, oh my gosh, get out the pitchforks. Instead, we're like, all right, adventure of life. So you decide to go to India, as one does. When you pitched this, I thought this was like out of the blue that you decided this, but it wasn't. You had this connection and you went to go connect with this guy.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I wrote to him and he said no. And then I wrote to him again and I said, I'm not going to take no for an answer.
He said no. And you were like, sorry, that option is not on the table.
I said, you know, like, we really need to meet. This has been like years in the making already. It was like, by that time, it was like 6 years in the making of our initial sort of me thinking I should be with that guy to this. And I really needed to follow my intuition. But yes, the year before all of this went down, I had an initial diagnosis of what they thought was pre-diabetes, diabetes they didn't know. And by the time I actually, you know, left the relationship, my diabetes was sort of under control, but being managed, but nobody really knew, you know, what it was. I didn't have the full complement of blood tests. I wasn't sure, but it really was type 1 diabetes. So I kind of negligently went on this trip, not really, you know, having all the tools at hand to manage the situation other than my ideas about how to manage the situation.
Right. Type 1 diabetes, which is the one where your pancreas totally stops producing insulin and you have to really manage it by hand. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a factor that
you were pretty sick, you know, then.
Well, I was sick, but I was like, the blood sugar levels were still manageable with diet. Because what happens with type 1 is it can be a slow progression where your body just slowly shuts down and stops producing the insulin, or it can be a very fast, like all of a sudden your pancreas just stops producing the insulin. So for me, it was very slow. So they were saying, oh, well, it's not really at the point where you need insulin yet. So just keep managing it with diet and exercise. And so that was what I was doing. And I felt like, okay, well, I'm managing this really well, so it's all going to be fine. I didn't really think in my head, it's just going to progress and get worse and worse. And at the same time, my son he had skipped a year. So he was 17 and he just graduated. And he kind of had said to me, look, you know, it's going to be better for me if I just move out.
He was like, thanks for this, but I want off this roller coaster.
Absolutely. That was how he was. I love you guys, but I'm so sick of the drama. I'm out of here.
Oh, God bless you.
Those were his words.
Yeah.
So he packed up and moved to Melbourne.
Okay.
And, you know, has had a fabulous, you know, his life just went like this.
Very nice.
But it was and we just had finished our last CD. So our last album had been produced and I literally
This is kind of a very rock and roll story. It's not like rock and roll that you're making like yogi music, but it's a very much like, yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah, so I got on the plane with my box of CDs and I had shipped boxes and boxes of my stuff. I don't know why I shipped all these boxes to India to go and live on this at this retreat center with the plan to meet John kind of at some point in like a few months. So we couldn't meet straight away, visa issues, this, that, and the other, but we could plan to meet a couple of months later. And so I first just went to India and went into this retreat center, which is where I had taught all my yoga teacher trainings. And I knew the cook there, so she knew I had some problems with my health. So she was sort of cooking for me and making sure I could manage my levels. And I just did all the workshops that came through, like all the self-development stuff and all the yoga stuff, and just cried and cried and cried and
So
cried.
actually, I mean, that's actually there's some kismet there, right? Which is, you know, India is famous for its, you know, very fresh veggie forward food. And the spices are really complementary to training and monitor, you know, and so there was some kismet there. You had somebody to work with you. You were in a foreign country, but there was there. All right, so you're in the retreat center. You've got your boxes of CDs. You've said goodbye to your old life. How long were you there? Like, I mean, did you have a plan for how long you were going to stay? Was it like, I'm moving to India, I live here now? Like, what were your thoughts at the time?
I was so out of my body. I was so shocked. I've been married for 20 years. I didn't really know what to do with myself in a sense, like in a future sense. I just knew I had things organized, like because I was a global yoga teacher at that point. So I had gigs all over planned. Like, you know, I had a festival that I was going to be teaching at in Bali. I had 3 weeks of work in Japan, then I had some work in Europe. So I knew that I couldn't stay in India permanently, but I sort of thought I'll start here and I'll just see what happens and I'll meet John and we'll kind of go from there. So when I got to India, it turned out that when we could meet, we would only have 10 days together to get to know each other. And I said to him, look, I don't think after all this time, the 10 days is going to be enough. So he said, well, where are you going next? And I said, well, I have to go to Bali to teach this on this festival. And he said, well, I'll come to Bali with you. I was like, okay, first of all, don't know the guy. Second of all, like, okay, follow me to Bali, whatever. And then he said, I said, then I'm only in Bali, you know, for like 10 days. Where? And he said, like, where are you going next? I said, well, I'm going to Japan. He said, oh, I've always wanted to go to Japan.
So this begins the nomadic tour of Rachel and John getting to know each other. I see. I
So then
see.
I'm running around getting it because he's South African. He has to have a visa everywhere. So I'm organizing the visa. Still don't know the guy anyway. So it ends up that decides that he's going to travel with me on this whole trip. And I'm like, what if we don't like each other? Like,
Right.
we don't know each other. We don't know anything, you know? And he's like, you know, don't worry about that. You know, if we don't like each other, we'll just, you know, part ways and roll around on the floor laughing and say goodbye. He had a really brilliant attitude because he had a brilliant attitude because he'd been living on an ashram for 7 years, studying this beautiful system of knowledge with his teacher, where he really came to understand the source of joy, the source of peace, the source of everything, really. And so he was, you know, a living example of that. So everything to him was sort of impersonally, you know, everything just. I don't really know how to put it into words, but he just has this great attitude towards life because he
So,
sees
but
it for
you're
what it
like a
is.
freight train at this point. Like you're like your life is changing. You are questioning your identity. You've been married for 20 years. You're trying to figure out what you're doing. You're just you hadn't actually made. You were doing the same job you had been doing before. So like your marriage had changed and so on, and you had changed your home base, but you were carrying forward the patterns and the actions from before when your marriage broke apart. And then he comes and he's like leveled up in his mindset work and he's a calming influence. And you guys come together in the crazy Rachel John World Tour, which honestly sounds like the greatest vacation ever. You're like in India, you're going to Bali, you're going to Japan. I'm very envious of this. But so the dot, dot here. That we're going to wrap up a little bit and bring all these things together, that becomes your future. You guys, like that, what changed in your life is that you and John become partners.
Yeah, I mean, it was just absolutely meant to be. I mean, when we came together, it was a very magical moment. We hadn't met, but we organized to meet in India, and he kind of flew in and I walked up to him. We met on a beach in the south of Goa, and we just took one look at each other. We had a bit of a hug and we walked down the beach together. I think we had a bit of a kiss, and then that was it. It was just like absolutely meant to be. And I
That's
think
amazing.
the big thing was that he wanted to share everything that he'd been experiencing. We had a strong connection. His whole family's from Holland. I grew up in the town that his whole family lived in. We had no idea about that. And we just had so many different kinds of kismet connections. He'd come to Holland when I was like 7 years old. He'd been in Australia when I was in Australia, like all these points where we could have met, even though we're 15 years apart, we didn't meet. And then we had this moment where we met, and then it just became, we have to work together, we have to teach together, we have to live together, we have to be together. And there was just absolutely no question. It was almost like, and I did have an astrology reading like a year before where they said, oh, you haven't met your soulmate yet. You know, you haven't met the person that you're supposed to be. And then I met John, and it was like, okay, that's it. You know, we're supposed to do this,
Oh,
you know. So
I
that's the
love it.
story.
So this, I just want to, I'm going to loop this all the way around because the decision that we were talking about today that I thought we, or the decision that I thought we were talking about was the trip to India, which was the change in your life, which was an enormous shift and so on and so forth. But if you roll it all the way back, or if you walk the cat back, like, because I like to talk about the choices we make and the impact they have on our lives, right? If in New York you had not become a yoga teacher, none of this would have unfolded the way that it did.
Yeah, because if I hadn't met, I mean, I was already doing yoga, but if I had not met
Right.
this teacher in New
Yeah.
York, who John's was John's best friend, this would have
Right.
never happened.
It would
And
have never
so
happened. Yeah.
that was, to me, that was a kismet moment for sure, because all these synchronicities lined up for me to meet this teacher. And then it enabled me to meet John. And so we often talk about that. And my teacher always laughs. How did you two end up together? Like, he
Yeah,
finds
no,
it very hysterical.
that is it. So it's that is amazing. Okay, so we're gonna in a minute we're going to final wrap up this interview and with some questions, but I want to give you a choice, a chance. I want to give you a chance to tell the audience about what you guys do today and how they can find you online, and then you have a very special offer that you are sharing with the audience, which I'll share with everybody after you tell them what you do.
Okay, so we just, as soon as we got together, we just had this absolute passion that we wanted to share and combine all our knowledge. So John has the whole stream of traditional Vedic Upanishadic wisdom, which is really answering the big questions to life, like who are you, why you're here, what's the meaning of life, what's the meaning and purpose of your life. And then I brought all the yoga stream, like the physical postures, also working with breath work, sound, just all the different things. So we brought all that together, and we wanted to create a physical retreat center in South Africa. And we actually bought a piece of land, and we went forward with that. And then the pandemic happened, and so we took it all online, and we created the Sundaram Online Ashram. Sundaram means the beautiful, and it is the beauty that we see all around us is the reflection of who we are. We are the beautiful. And so we created this beautiful online platform where we offer ongoing yoga classes, these beautiful talks in self-knowledge, which is called Atmavidya in the tradition, and breath work and all these other beautiful things. So so that's our online offering, and we have a whole bunch of
That's amazing.
students, and we have a great time sharing all the stuff that we've both accumulated over the of his 50 years of knowledge and my 40 years. And so we have 90 years combined teaching that we share.
That's fantastic. And you are offering all of the listeners and the watchers a free mini retreat. Which who does not need a mini retreat? A mini retreat on the ashram, which is a digital ashram, an online ashram, and people can sign up, and there's a link in the show notes. And also for everybody, easiest way to get these links is to subscribe to the Imperfect Adulting email community, and then I email them out to you and you just click on them, but it will be in both places. That is a very generous offer. I love it. I want to say thank you for offering it to the audience.
It's
All
just a
right.
pleasure.
Oh, good. All right. So we're going to wrap up with three rapid fire questions. These are Not related to anything. My head is spinning from your story. My head is spinning from your story. We're going to see how this goes. I loved your story so very much. It was exactly what I needed for my afternoon. I want to say thank you to that. All right. So, do you, this is a great thing because it's morning for you where you are. It's afternoon where I am. It's morning for you. Do you have for yourself a set morning routine that you go through? Are you one of those people who has a morning routine that you get up and you follow a certain steps? And if so, what is it?
Okay, so I get up and I make myself a lovely fruit breakfast, and then I do my yoga practice. I actually do at the moment I'm doing a lot of dance, sort of a dance warm up just to kind of get my body warm, and then I do a very advanced breath work. We call it pranayama practice. And then I eat my breakfast while watching the political news.
Oh my gosh. How well that okay. Very I skipped that part. Like I'm doing everything I can to avoid the political news and also the national the right now California is on fire. I'm trying to avoid what watching them too because it's hard to watch. All right. So next question. What do you like to do? How do you like to consume things for joy and entertainment? Are you a reader? Are you somebody who likes television? Are you a movie person? What's the thing that you do for joy? Not for education, but for
Okay, this is
joy.
like really embarrassing, but I'm going to be really honest here. I love watching Netflix like teen dramas, like
Oh.
Riverdale, or I can't even remember how. Right now I'm watching Vampire Diaries.
Oh, really?
It's such escapism for me because I write all day, or I'm practicing yoga, or I'm working with people, in this one area, and so I find like it switches my brain off and takes me into my youth,
Yeah.
and like the drama because I don't live a
Okay.
very dramatic life at all. I live a
Very good.
very,
So watching the Vampire Diaries, very, very good. So there is a follow-up Vampire Diaries question, right? Which is that you have to like, how far into it are you?
second season.
All right, so are you what are the characters' names? Are you Damon or Stefan? Who's your hero?
Definitely Damon.
The funniest question I've asked in the world. Okay, very good. All right. Oh my goodness. Okay, here we go. All right. When you take vacations, I don't even know how to ask you this question because you've been all over the world. You've been to Bali, you've been to all of these places. But nowadays, when you take vacations, are you now a person who likes to like go a long way away, or do you like to stay home and be, close to where you are?
I think because I've had so much traveling, I think it's much more like, yeah, a staycation is really
Is what
lovely.
you love. Okay.
We just had a staycation where we stayed in a beautiful home. We just went to the beach every day because we lived right next to the beach. We didn't work at all, and it was just absolutely brilliant. Yeah, so staycation for me for sure.
I love that answer. Very, very good. That's it, Rachel Zinman. Thank you so much for being an amazing guest on the show today.
Thank you, Amy. Incredible to talk with you. And you really made me think about some things that I haven't thought about for a while. So I really appreciate chatting with you. It's been amazing.
Very good. Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.